Good. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're doing, all things considered, doing well.
Well, we must carry on. You know, we can't just be taken down by all the stuff out there all the time.
No, and I'm so fully engaged in it that I don't have any choice except to make it work.
Exactly. Yeah, and you got to be fully engaged in it. You got to be a citizen. You know.
So, Yes. Awesome. So, just before I say welcome to Planet Waves FM, I just want to scribble down the true facts of your involvement with mothering. Whether you're the owner, the publisher, the founder, the editor.
Another editor, publisher, and owner. I bought the magazine from Aveline Evanson in 1980. She founded it in Ridgeway, Colorado in 1976. Mm-hmm. And then, I met her and just a series of, really it was a wonderful miracle because we didn't have any money to buy the magazine. And I tried to borrow money from my dad and maybe you want to hear this whole story.
No. That's okay. No, the important fact is that you were the principal person, the editor, and the publisher since
1980 to 2011.
Okay. And now what? It's a message board of some kind. Like, what is it exactly?
Well, that's what happened is that when the internet got big and before Facebook, the discussion forums on mothering.com just blew up. And they actually were the biggest discussion forums for parents on the web. So it was. So when I got into trouble because of the last recession and had to develop all this debt for the print magazine, I actually sold the website to pay off the print debt magazine.
Oh dear.
So that was where. They have since resold mothering.com to someone else. So it continues to be discussion forums.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. And they had never heard of you on the path to looking for you. I called them. Hello. It's 2021. I'm sorry about that. Sorry.
No, and then people.
I'm a visitor from a different century.
They don't even know. They've had no continuity, and people tell me I don't even know if they have really editors doing much over there. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're doing really.
All right. So I will just start by introducing you, and give like a 30-second. Recap of how I discovered mothering, and we'll just wing it from there.
All right, sounds good, Eric.
Awesome, good. All right, hold on. So let me give it a bit of silence. 1, 2, 3. I would like to welcome to Planet Waves FM Peggy O'Mara, the former editor and publisher of Mothering Magazine between 1980 and 2011. Peggy, welcome to Planet Waves FM.
Thank you, Eric. Great to be here.
So, as I mentioned to you, I was hanging out with this woman named Hillary in Woodstock in 1994, and she had a kid and was one of those like natural type of girls, long brown hair, kid on the hip, making brown rice type of young women.
One of the crunchies, as they used to call it.
One of the crunchies, and at that time I was. Deep in the issue covering Monsanto, in particular their PCB and dioxin problem, and Hillary was a fantastic collaborator on that. She had a kind of a devious mind and could decrypt all these evil agendas of these companies. But while I was hanging out in Hillary's room, smoking her mother's pot, and learning how to read tarot cards. And doing dioxin stories for Lives of Our Times and Sierra Magazine, she was a subscriber to Mothering.
Uh-huh.
And every now and then in my journalism career as an editor, I've always been an editor since I was like 16, I find something that just seems really interesting and good and solid. Mm. And Mothering had a voice. It had a viewpoint, but it was a fair, objective viewpoint in a way.
Wow, thank you.
Yes, and I think the most important thing was it was a soothing balm. As a young guy, I grew up in the 1970s under the peak mm-hmm. of feminism mm-hmm. that decried mm-hmm. motherhood, that made mm-hmm. women mm-hmm. who wanted to raise children into some kind of infidels. And here was a radical, kind of a deep truth, wow. let's be real viewpoint of women wow. who were into being moms.
Into it.
Yeah. Oh. Yes.
That is so beautiful. I mean, that's exactly what I wanted to do. When I bought the magazine from Addie Evanson, I said to her, well, let's change it to mothers, you know, mothers and fathers. And she said, no, we have to celebrate mothering. We have to celebrate mothers because everything in the culture is telling the mothers that they're no good. In fact, the feminists at that time were saying mothers are just family servants. Oh. And my experience of being a mother was that it was celebratory, that it transformed me. It just made me into an entirely new person. And I felt so powerful as a mother. And I wanted to share that feeling with others. And I wanted to give people information, the information that I had wanted. And those lonely nights and, you know, in the middle of the night when you're wondering what the heck you're going to do about whatever it is mm-hmm. that your baby is doing now. So that is what I wanted to do. And I also didn't want to overwhelm people, because if you would look through any magazine, and Parents Magazine in those days, there were so many things you were supposed to buy and that you had to have, and so many ads to overwhelm you. So I also wanted the ads to be sort of gentle and in keeping with the content of the magazine. And I'm so thrilled that you saw that.
Mm-hmm. Now, along the way, you know, reading various issues for that fairly short period of time, what I noticed was that there was a certain caution around injecting children with these substances coming out of hypodermic needles and factories that were allegedly there to prevent disease. And I don't like to stick needles in myself. It's just not this thing I do intuitively. Like, it's, you know what I mean? It's like not,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I never,
yeah.
I've taken a lot of different,
sure.
I've taken a lot of different drugs, but it would never occur to me to inject heroin or cocaine. Like, come on, I'll smoke some pot. That's nice. But, yeah, or take sure. mushrooms, but injecting things. And so mothering had a viewpoint that this is something to be concerned about, just to really stop and pay attention to. And so while this whole insanity was building in 2020, I kept thinking back, and the vaccine awareness movement was gaining steam in 2020, as it really, I think, has never had before. I kept thinking, whoever was the editor of Mothering is really responsible for starting this. And I have not seen one other writer besides myself credit you or Mothering with focusing the issue and focusing even the question. So that's why I sniffed you out and brought you on the program, and you're kind enough to reply.
Here we are.
And here we are.
Well, you know, and you can imagine. So we're, you know, young parents in the early 70s. Many of us, myself, I went back to the land. You know, we went back to the land. We were very discouraged by the Vietnam War, discouraged by our society. We wanted to drop out. We wanted to create our own reality. And we wanted to live a natural life, and a life that we could control in some way. We could make our own food. We could grow our own food. We could make our own clothes. We wanted to do those things. So when we had children and the vaccinations came up, we had big questions about that mm-hmm. because it wasn't natural in any sense of the way, in any, you know, in any sense. And so I did articulate those questions the parents were asking. And so much of the content in Mothering was coming from my own questions and the questions of our staff that we were all having. People would often say to us, I can't believe you are covering these same things that I'm thinking about. But we were a collective, you know, still are a collective with these questions about what is natural. And for me, this sort of question of, or the whole hypothesis is based on, okay, your child might get sick later, so come in and get a shot now to make your child sick now to prevent them from getting sick later, was a logic that I, you know, was very difficult to accept. And so I think, again, we're all coming from that natural point of view. Mm-hmm. So that's why we started asking those questions.
Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like you were actually seeing cases of vaccine injury in the 1970s and early 1980s.
No, not at all. No.
You weren't seeing injuries?
No,
weren't seeing kids get sick?
No, we knew nothing about that. We knew that there were other kids I mean, we didn't know any much about what was happening out there to others. That came more in the 80s, because in the it wasn't until the 80s that this group called Dissatisfied Parents Together started, and that morphed into the National Vaccine Information Center. So it was Barbara Lowe Fisher and some of her friends who had did observe vaccine injuries in their kids after the DPT shot. And her son has some learning disabilities. So they went to Congress. They were the ones that were behind this, the National Vaccine Injury Act that happened in, I believe, 1984.
86.
That created the VIA. The Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, the Vaccine Adverse Effects Reporting System, all that was created to protect the vaccine manufacturers, because they were getting so many... They were being sued so much that they were saying, we're going to stop making this stuff unless you protect us and protect our liability. So the government took over the liability and, you know, the parents had to, you know, be the guinea pigs for that. But yeah, no, we didn't see any injuries. It was really more coming from a philosophical point of view. We wanted to lead a natural life and we just didn't understand how injecting things, circumcision came into that picture also.
Yes.
It was like a medical, it was a surgical procedure, and both those things we had to really think about as natural parents and had lots of questions about.
Yeah, that was
so no injuries at that point. It wasn't.
Go ahead, please. Continue.
Go ahead. No, it wasn't until like, so there was the stuff that happened in the 80s, and it really wasn't until the 90s that the whole thimerosal and the autism stuff started. We started to hear more about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is true.
And I can go into that more, but.
I would love it. It is true that. Really? They realized they couldn't make money on these vaccines. There were so many injured people that they and they were being sued so frequently that in case no one, someone listening may not have heard of this, but the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 86, signed by Reagan, you know, right at the big, long peak of the Reagan administration, it indemnifies vaccine manufacturers. And it sets up a special court as part of the, it's a court of claims, a federal court of claims. And if your child is killed or injured by one of these injections, you cannot sue somebody like Pfizer. You actually sue the Department of Health and Human Services.
Yeah. And it's a very,
Go ahead. I was gonna say, there's no jury, there's no discovery. And liability is limited to $250,000 death benefit and $250,000 pain and suffering benefit.
Yeah, but people have gotten more than that. There's some settlements that are in the $1 million, I think. Because I want to say Hannah Poling, I think she got a, their family got $1 million for autism. But yeah, there are all kinds of limitations on it, Eric. And most people, I mean, it's expensive to go through. It takes forever. There's a lot of... You know, you have to have discovered any kind of injury within a very small window of time.
Yes.
It's very much geared against the parents winning, but some parents have won. And that's what something the public doesn't know. You know, the public is very ill-informed about the fact that there are, in fact, vaccine injuries. There are not a lot of them. I mean, in percentage in comparison to the millions of people who are vaccinated, there aren't a lot of them. But it doesn't really matter if it's one. You know, it's just one if it's your child or yourself.
Yes.
Doesn't matter how many there are. So,
and we don't really know, so though. The truth is, we don't really know because most of them are not reported as vaccine injuries.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and they don't know that they were vaccine injured. And you have many parents of autistic children absolutely certain it had nothing to do with the MMR shot. That's it. They decided. But what we know is the more vaccines in the schedule, the more autism there is.
There was a big, you know, I'm a little confused about that right now, to tell you the truth, because I don't know. It was very clear in the 90s, the EPA came out and they said to vaccine manufacturers, there is too much mercury in the childhood vaccines. You've got to get rid of that mercury. If a small baby gets too much, they could get way more than the amount of mercury they're supposed to get. And a lot of parents who... And then you know, and that was for vaccines and biologics. And the vaccine manufacturers did get the thimerosal out of vaccines after that. But a lot of parents who had autistic children at that point would get them tested for metal toxicity, and they would find huge levels of mercury in their blood and in their hair and then their body. So there was the general consensus at the time that it was the thimerosal that was causing the thimerosal in the vaccines, and too much of it was causing the autism in kids. But since the thimerosal came out of vaccines, we have not seen those numbers go down, those kids that are getting the chronic diseases from vaccines. And so I think that we have, like you said, more than one thing or more than one thing going on. And we don't know the effects of all those vaccinations on kids over time. You know, it's just, there's an increasing number of vaccines given to children all the time, and when they're really young, and enforced by the fact that they can't go to school if they don't get them.
Yeah, it's horrendous. And this all comes back to whether you decide what goes into your body and the incredible coercion being used. I mean, by the way, I'm not convinced it's just the thimerosal that's responsible for the autism. There's numerous chemicals in these things, and I have heard
aluminum,
and that the thimerosal is snuck in. That there's a way they get it in through the back door.
It's still in there. It's just in this teeny, teeny little percentage, exactly. And I had a talk. I talked to a man at the American Academy of Pediatrics years ago, a doctor, and just saying, why don't you just get it out of there? Why don't you take it out of the vaccines? And he says, because we import them to other countries. So they're also this whole business model of vaccines, which a lot of parents don't think about, that vaccines are a business. And so they're putting in these products, they're importing them to poor children in Africa, you know, so we can help them by giving them mercury.
Right. I mean, the correlation between autism and the number of vaccines in the schedule is undeniable.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's causing
it. People will recount. And this is why, when you brought up the parents, I had mixed feelings. I'm sympathetic to those parents that don't want to see or don't know what caused their child's autism, because it's a terrible thing to come to the conclusion that you did something that caused this autism, that you took your child to get vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we have to be sympathetic with their pain. But many parents they can document it. You know, it's usually around 18 months. It's usually with the second shot. And they'll see the decline in speech and language in the child and in their behavior that happens directly after the vaccine. They see that it's very related. And many of the parents are medical professionals. They're doctors or nurses. One gal I know has been on the FDA advisory committee in the past, and she was concerned about, as you said, other ingredients, aluminum. Dr. Bill Sears is also concerned about aluminum in vaccines. She was concerned about the adjuvants, the things that are put in. There's just, if you know, as natural parents, again, going back to my original thing about Mothering Magazine, you read the ingredients in things. You read the ingredients in everything that you get. You want to get things that don't have a lot of crazy ingredients. So if you read the ingredients on vaccines and you read the product safety information and the cautions, it's very sobering. You know, it's very sobering. And parents seldom have the opportunity to do that or don't want to. See, I think it comes down to really not wanting to rock the boat. I think there's only about 20% of people overall that are willing to, you know, rock the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go in and you look into vaccines and you decide as a parent, I don't want to do this, you're going to have to go against your friends, against your family. You're going to be criticized. People sometimes do not want that social stigma. I think that's what comes down to the core issue, that they just don't want to do that, go against the crowd. Just we see that now. That's we see that now with COVID.
Well, the doctor has always been a kind of a deified figure in American culture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a whole doctor God thing. And even when they recommend smoking cigarettes, you know, people believe them. But I mean, as a child,
or formula back in the day, formula.
Yeah.
Let's have all that
formula. Breastfeeding is disgusting. Yeah.
Oh,
that
disgusting.
Bullshit.
Let's get that new product.
Yeah. Yeah.
That new thing we can make in a factory. Make it perfect.
I mean, even as a 7-year-old, 8-year-old child going to the pediatrician, I figured out that the doctors didn't actually know anything.
Well, they know stuff, but they're not God, you know.
We didn't leave with answers.
We're a little bit better.
No, we never leave with an answer. We'd never leave with information. They would hem and haw And I know when somebody's giving me real information. I was the same person at age 7.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But that, we didn't learn anything.
I was the same person at age 7. That's everything. Yeah, so they don't. Well, you know, that's one of the things that I'm very frustrated about with COVID. It's like there is no information about your immune system, as if you don't have an immune system. I mean, you have a circulatory system, a respiratory system. All these systems work without you even thinking about them. And we also have an immune system, which also works without us even thinking about it. Yeah. But we don't have any information in the media about what we can do to enhance our immune system, what things we can do if we feel like we're catching something. We know all these things through the natural community.
Yes.
You know, there's so many things that you can take or do to enhance your immune system. And, or even if you get something to, you know, I mean, there's the homeopathic acylcysteine, which is the nation's biggest, most popular remedy for flu. You know, there's elderberry syrup, there's echinacea, there's all kinds of herbal things you can do, food things, but we don't see anything about that. It's just like we're just these helpless victims out there ready to be attacked by any virus that comes along. So the whole psychology of that is terrible also, because how would we ever get to a world that's overpopulated if we were that fragile? You know, it's ridiculous that we aren't given any of that information to make ourselves healthier, or even the assumption that we are, well, that we have an immune system, basically,
Right. Yeah, there's none of that is getting out. My first document regarding COVID was an email from one of the scientists who first worked on coronaviruses in the 1970s. So there was a new thing in the 70s, and he sent an email to a couple of friends, and then, like what happened with a couple of other people like Tom Cowan, it wasn't supposed to be, the whole world wasn't supposed to read it or hear it. But he said in this email, look, I've worked with these viruses. They are absolutely averse to zinc. All you need to do is like gargle with zinc, and there's no way you're getting a coronavirus.
Wow.
Zinc. So I'm thinking neti pot. Like, what's up? But that was suppressed.
Well, even zinc is it, Go ahead.
No, that was suppressed.
That's just part of,
Vitamin D. So there was one piece on CNN back when I canceled my commercial TV. I got so fed up. But they did one piece on zinc that I saw, and I only saw it broadcast once. It is known. So everything that could possibly help, besides a so-called vaccine, which this is not, has been blanked. They have just canceled it.
Yeah.
And it's up to freaks like me to write about homeopathy.
Yeah, it isn't even allowed, to, as you know, the censorship on the net is so huge. It isn't even allowed to get through. Even if you search for it, you know, as you know, like now when you search for things, the whole first page is all WebMD, CDC. You can't even, it's very difficult to even find those things, you know, if you could. But zinc is like, I mean, I take that every day. That's just part of my regular regime. And that's a huge, important infection fighting mineral. Mm-hmm. Oysters, lots of zinc in oysters.
Mm-hmm. So what can you tell me about those early days when this conversation was getting focused? What were actual parents at that time who were questioning this thinking?
Well, the first article we published in Mothering was in 1978, and it was really just about questions. And I think the main thing that they were asking is again about how, again, there wasn't a lot of information about vaccine injuries, but there was just an intuitive sense that there was, that we were putting our children at risk. Because we didn't know, enough information, but we just didn't know what was, you know, I'll just speak for myself. I didn't like the trade-off. I didn't feel afraid enough about the diseases to trade off with the questions and fears and the unknowns I had about the vaccines. Mm-hmm. The diseases weren't in front of me. You know, if something was in front of me and I was afraid of it for my kids, I would take care of it. Tetanus is one thing that I would say, you know, is an example of a vaccine that I think has been valuable to me at some times when my kids have actually had injuries that I thought required that. And that's been very rare, maybe one or two times. But most other vaccines, there was no disease that I was afraid of. I never saw diphtheria, DPT. My sister had pertussis as a child. But again, it wasn't in my world, and I didn't feel it was all about doing a risk-benefit analysis. I think it was, again, because we were asking questions about our whole world. You know, we asked questions about the Vietnam War. We didn't like that. We wanted to live a natural life. We wanted to eat natural food. We stopped, you know, we started vegetarianism, making our own things, making our own herbal products. So we really created the whole natural product industry, the whole natural lifestyle that's now really popular in the United States by asking those questions and by looking at, you know, alternatives to the things that, that we had in front of us. So I think the questions were more philosophical. We weren't, again, we weren't seeing the injuries. We were just saying we don't. Not even, I don't know if we were worried about injuries as much as what would be the effect, you know? Could it? How is it going to affect you? You know what I mean?
What's the result of doing this besides the intended result?
If I give the vaccine, maybe my kid's going to be a little bit different. I mean, there's just going to be some effect. How do we don't know. It was a huge unknown. And for me, again, there was this, like, I had questions, but I didn't think of myself as, I don't want to vaccinate. It was just that I could never get up from the rocking chair and take my little baby into the doctor to get sick, just in case she might get sick later. I could never go with that logic. And so time went on, months went on, years went on, and then I was like, oh, I guess I didn't vaccinate, you know. But it wasn't something I started out to do that. It was just that I never could justify it to myself.
Okay, so in other words, this is not a quote-unquote anti-vax position, which I think is pure propaganda. That word is not a real word.
Don't you think? It isn't. And I don't know anybody that starts out like just being anti-vax like that. They struggle with this thing. They struggle with it. They have kids. They want to do the right thing. Yeah. And now we see more vaccine injuries, so they can look at that evidence. But people struggle with it, and I would totally agree with you. This whole anti-vaxxer is what they call astroturfing. It's just a propaganda technique to, to make the other side look like they're crazies.
Yeah.
And they talk about like this, somehow the vaccine movement is this movement. It's got all this funding. I mean, I don't
well,
see that.
What would the goal be? Like we like the measles, so therefore we're anti-vax. One thing, let's come back to the natural food movement. But I want to just tell you one very short story from Monday's event at Foley Square Park in New York City. I talked to lots of people that day, and wanted to meet this guy's like enormous, cushy, sweet pit bull. So I walked up to him. Well, I meet every dog. I have kind of a rule of the road, and I meet every dog. So I walked up to him and I asked if I could meet his dog, and he said sure. And then I met him. And we got on the topic of vaccines, and he's a guy from Netherlands, a Dutchman, and he said he like kind of insinuated that he had been injured by a vaccine, and he pulled up his shirt and he exposed his shoulder blade, and kind of popped around a thing under his skin, on his back on one side beneath his shoulder blade. And it turns out that this is a built-in defibrillator, because he had been scratched by his dog, a minor scratch. A scratch cannot give you tetanus, but he was scratched by his dog. He went to the doctor, and the doctor said, I am not going to let you leave without getting a tetanus shot. He got the tetanus shot, and he immediately died of heart failure on the spot. He was revived. And then he had part of the treatment was, so he was dead. And so he described being dead, and then he was revived. And then part of the treatment was they installed, I didn't even know these existed. It's like a cardiac life vest, only it's built into your body. And if your heart stops, it shocks it back into motion. Guys, maybe he was 35. And I was thinking, you know, okay, maybe the tetanus shot. And I'm thinking, wait.
Yeah,
a second.
Exactly. So that's what just said. Yeah.
So
well, and I think here's the thing. Go ahead.
No, I'm at the point now where I think the entire thing is a scam.
See, I don't know if I want to go in that direction. I think we've got so much hysteria right now. would like to calm that down a little bit. I don't know that. I think it's people are just zealots. I think they believe, the public health people believe this message. They believe that we've got to do this. We've got to get this out there. And the criminal part is that they are accepting the collateral damage.
Yes.
That I think that part of the psychology, and I've heard it even talked about and articulated out loud in, you know, some of these FDA hearings and various advisory groups, is that that's just the way it goes, you know, that they're just willing to accept some collateral damage. And so from that point of view, if you say, we've given out millions of shots and we've only had, you know, what, 50, what is it, 20, up to 26,000 adverse reactions now, something reported. So from that point of view, from a public health point of view, you're like, that's cool. You know, we didn't have that much. But from the personal point of view, it's insane and criminal.
Yeah, it's premeditated murder if you know that it's going to happen to someone. And if I fire a shot or someone fires a shot into a football stadium and they kill someone, they're not exonerated because they did not know the person's name. But that's the logic of, well, this vaccine is going to kill so many people. We just don't know who they are. So it's okay. I was not of the view that this is all a scam until I really dug into it last year. And there were a few points of persuasion. One of them was finding the work of Dr. Christopher Korch, who specializes in misidentified and contaminated cell cultures. He's devoted his entire career to exposing the problem of misidentified and contaminated cell cultures that are used for research and production. So I corresponded with him and I read some of his work. And then I read The Virus and the Vaccine about the polio vaccine. And I learned about the Qatar incident. First time out of the gate, 40,000 people got sick on the first day. And then I learned about the SV40 problem, contamination of basically, as far as I understand, all the polio vaccines till about 2000 were contaminated with an oncogenic monkey virus called SV40, which the CDC and FDA knew were in there. They admit on the website 100 million people were injected up until 1963. But then I saw the evidence that the contaminant was in the injection up through 2000, when I believe they stopped using monkey cell lines. Then I started listening to Judith Mikovits, who everyone loves to hate. And she said, all these calf serum products are packed with viruses coming along for the ride. So the contaminants are not just the ingredients. The contaminants are also biological debris left over from the process. Are you there?
What happened? Did they censor us already?
So where did we lose each other?
I want to say, was it, why did I have 319? That was on my timer.
No, 33 minutes in. No, the Qatar incident,
okay,
I was talking about polio, the Qatar incident.
Yeah, go SV40. Back. I didn't hear that. I didn't hear Qatar.
Ah, okay. So just briefly, I was horrified by the SV40 issue all the times I read about it. That all the polio vaccines, certainly era, were contaminated with SV40. Simian virus 40.
Yeah, I have two friends that died of brain tumors that I, you know, didn't connect at the time to that, but yeah.
Right. So then, out of the gate, the polio vaccine was a disaster. The Qatar incident.
It was.
In 57, I believe, made 40,000 kids sick right immediately on the first day of the vaccine. They injected 200,000 kids and 40,000 became sick.
Here's the data that I have, that it was 1955 that 70,000 got polio within days of being vaccinated, 200 were paralyzed, and 10 died. Qatar Laboratories had failed to kill the polio virus used in the vaccine.
As far as I'm concerned, the discussion's over.
Yeah.
If I was a parent, forget about it.
Exactly. You don't need more than a couple things. I mean, nothing. And also, here's the other thing that happened that really influenced the, again, going back to this thing I was talking about, the EPA and the mercury and the vaccines, and then around the, it was in the 19, I want to get the dates here right, but at the end of the, right before the turn of the century, was this controversy about the hepatitis B vaccine for infants, thimerosal in vaccines, and also a rotavirus vaccine that was introduced and then recalled within days. So there were, and there were congressional hearings that were held looking into thimerosal. So there was, those parents that were aware and had children during that time were also really, became really confused and had lots of questions and fearful of vaccines after, again, the going, changing the mind, which is what we're seeing now with the COVID vaccine. Oh, no, do this, do that. No, don't do this. The boosters, oh, yeah, they're for everybody. Oh, no, they're not. They're just for these people. But the COVID booster is, you know, I don't want to jump over it. We're jumping all over the place. But I'm concerned because I listened to the FDA hearing about the booster shots, and the majority of the panel were opposed to the booster shots for everybody. They voted, the FDA panel, just to recommend them for older people and for people that had health, whose jobs put them more at risk, which was very vague. Then they go over to the CDC, and the CDC says, no, let's just do booster shots for older people. Then the next day, the head of the CDC says, oh, no, let's do it for older people and those at risk from their jobs. And then 70% of those booster vaccines are going to be distributed through pharmacies. And my question is, are they prepared for anaphylactic shock and some of the things that can happen, which is what the CDC says? You should have all this ready and, you know, anywhere that you're administering the vaccine. And you can self-identify. You can go and get the vaccine and self-identify. So you can just go in there and say, I just need it. So really, it's the same thing like you're saying, is that was this intended all along, that we're just get everyone to want the booster, say they can't have it, but they can identify if they want it and get it themselves. I mean, if you weren't already discouraged and confused about vaccines, the way that the public health community has communicated or failed to communicate to us as citizens is, you know, has just raises a million questions for people.
And that's been the nature of this whole crisis. I mean, and I think we don't even need to go anywhere near this so-called vaccine for COVID to really have the vaccine discussion. Most people don't believe that there are vaccine injuries.
Yeah, they don't know that.
Or they're told, and they think this is just some horseshit from the, you know, the Weekly World News.
Yeah,
I mean, I talk about it. I'm certainly we're bringing it up now. We've got a good start.
No, but I mean, people that don't even or think you're. Oh no, that was my son. My son talked to somebody who was asking him about vaccines, and he mentioned to him the vaccine adverse events reporting system, and the guy said, "You must." You know, no, there's nothing like that. That doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. No. No.
And the part of the narrative that's so disingenuous is the constant message that there's no vaccine injuries, that nothing can hurt you, which you know isn't true. There is nothing in medicine that anyone can guarantee. You know, everyone has different reactions to things.
Yes.
To anything, to aspirin. I mean, you know, everyone's individual.
Everything has a risk associated with it. Every substance or drug taken, and I'm not talking about Coca-Cola that somebody might choke on. I mean, any pharmaceutical product, and even over-the-counter, or especially over-the-counter, there's a risk. They know they're going to kill some people with every substance.
Oh, here we go. Exactly.
And that's called risk assessment. Right,
spreading it through the people.
Premeditated murder. If you say we know we're gonna kill so many people, I'm looking for legal counter argument to that not being premeditated murder, other than we don't know their name in advance.
Or we're gonna just makes them chronically ill, because that's what we see in this country, is we have a decrease in acute illness, but a huge increase in chronic illness.
Yes.
And what's it related to?
Well, I have a theory. It's a business model.
Go ahead.
My theory is, now this is not just something I read on Twitter, right? I let myself get dragged completely under the waves on all these issues starting in March of 2020, and I was not ignorant going into this at all.
But
came down. It seemed to me that the every time I read a new book or study or hear about a new issue with a different substance, that these things that they call vaccines simply induce chronic illness, and they do nothing else. And then the same companies that make them make money on managing the chronic illness.
They only induce chronic disease. When measles goes through a community of kids, the kids that are not vaccinated get more measles, and the kids that aren't vaccinated get less. They don't get as much. They don't get as sick. I mean, not as many of them get sick, and they don't get as sick. So there is some protection against catching the disease or not getting it in a severe way, which is what the COVID thing is really about. Not that you're not going to, the COVID vaccine is really not to protect you from COVID, but to say that you won't get such a severe case. So I would say that the vaccines have some effectiveness. It doesn't mean that they're not causing chronic illness and more harm than good.
Right. But remember, this is not really studied. The problem is this is not really studied.
Well, there have been a few studies that nobody talks about comparing vaccinated to unvaccinated kids, and the unvaccinated kids always come out as more healthy. And they, again, because they're, and that's what the doctors will say who work with both populations, they will say that the vaccinated kids have more chronic illness and the unvaccinated kids have more acute illness, but they're healthier. And what is illness? And here we go about the whole immune system, because it is, in fact, getting sick, fighting off with a vigorous immune system that develops the immune system.
Yes. Yes.
We're supposed to get sick. We're supposed to get fevers. Kids are supposed to get sick. They have a million different diseases before they're 12 because mm-hmm. they're building their immune system. Mm-hmm. They're always, you know, they go to school, everyone gets sick, they come back. I don't know if, you know, I have a hard time thinking that they sit around, you know, rubbing their hands going, let's just hurt these people so we can make more money. But their business model is making more money, and they accept collateral damage as part of that. So whether they're, you know, overtly criminals or just ignorant fools, I don't know.
Well, not everyone in the organization has to understand the business plan, whatever the business plan may be.
Yeah.
But in tort law, if you know or should know that something is going to have or might have a detrimental effect, and you don't warn people, that's fraud and failure to warn.
So how does that, what are the implications for the vaccine industry then? Not the vaccine industry, but the government.
Well, they never have any implications, and the vaccine industry is one of two indemnified industries. The other one is the nuclear power industry. That's it.
Oh, my God.
There's just two. Now, why do you trust driving down the road in your Toyota? Well, part of the reason is because the Ford Pinto litigation put...
Thank you, Ralph Nader.
Yes. Put car manufacturers on notice that they better fix their problems. Because they found intent by Ford when they said, well, it'll just be cheaper to pay off the people who died than it will be to recall all those cars and fix the problem, which was if you were signaling in on the side of the gas tank. In other words, let's say the gas tank's on the right side of the car, signaling right, and you're rear-ended, the car blows up.
And so are you saying that the lack of liability for the vaccine industry, which means that they don't have to do anything?
No, they have to do nothing.
Because they have total indemnification.
Yeah. So,
and right now with COVID, because it's such a, you know, like, I mean, you know, because the public health community is in total agreement, or at least their public messaging is in total agreement, then they just, and now they're going to, you know, how many, three shots, and then how many after that? And people, you know, and the whole money of it, the whole, I mean, we're so right now, it's just, it's discouraging in this culture. That's not even a strong enough word. It's, you know, this is all about protecting the moneyed interests. It's all about protecting the moneyed interests, not the people.
Yes.
The government, that's what Congress does. They do nothing. And when they do things, I mean, they have this bill now that has a lot of good things for families, and it's $3.5 billion, but somehow we can't afford it, even though we can afford $730 billion a year for defense industry. Yeah, $3.5 billion.
That's it?
Yeah, that's all. That's what the Build Better Act bill is, $3.5 billion. Give me a break. And they're like, oh, we can't do this. We have to put people to work. We have to, even though it's reducing poverty among children by 40%. So we have to accept, and this is where people are naive, that our government and our congressional leaders do not support the will of the people. They support the will of the people that donate to them. Mm-hmm. And there have been studies done that say they no longer do what the people want. They do what their donors want. And they're so isolated there, you know. And again, that's where I think they're isolated there. That's all that's if that's all, the only people that are talking to them, putting that extreme pressure on them, we're all influenced by those things, by the environment we're in, by the people that are pressuring us. I'm not justifying that. I'm just saying that that's the environment that they're in, where people are lobbying against them or lobbying to them all the time.
Well,
so,
who's lobbyists for
the
people?
Congress, yeah. Yeah, who lobbies for? Well, the people are too busy trying to feed themselves.
But I don't have a lobbyist in Congress fighting for me, but
yeah,
Pfizer does.
Oh, yeah. Oh, more than, they probably got 100, mm-hmm. 200. Yeah, so the government is not helping us, and now this whole public health narrative is just so black and white, you know? There's just no nuance to it. There's no gray. There's just this one message, which is so ineffective. Mm-hmm. To tell people that already have questions about vaccines, just to insult them and to attack them and to use propaganda, it's not only cruel, it's ignorant. It's like, you're not going to convince people that way. They know what you're up to. And at this recent FDA hearing on the booster vaccine, there was an emergency room physician there who said, you know, the people that I'm talking to that come in who are not vaccinated know the most, are the most educated, and the unvaccinated and the ones that are getting vaccinated know nothing. So these people need to be talked to with the intelligence that they have.
Hold on. Wait, can you say that again, please? Who knows nothing and who knows something?
The emergency at the FDA hearing on the booster shots, an emergency physician from New Orleans mm-hmm. said that in the emergency room, when he was talking to people, that the people that came in, his basic point was listen to these people, because the people that came in that were not vaccinated were the most educated and knew the most about the COVID vaccine. And the people that came in that to be vaccinated didn't know anything.
That's my finding as well.
Exactly. And so there we go. Yeah. So, and his point again was, you know, just don't talk to them like they're stupid, because they're definitely not stupid. They're more educated than the ones who are getting vaccinated.
Yeah. Well, I'll share with you my interviews. Who knows? Maybe I'll play them at the end of this discussion. It'd be fun. I conducted outside of Madison Square Garden the night of the first ever concert for only vaccinated people, and I worked the line on 8th Avenue. Yeah, Foo Fighters. So I brought. I'm 2 hours from the city. It was a commitment, and I worked the line for an hour. And it's a good thing I've got a sense of humor and a thick skin, because I was just being beaten on and called every possible name, and no one could come forth with one fact about this thing they had injected themselves with. Not a
they
fact.
They do nothing about it. Nothing. Right, just going to go to the concert.
Yeah, that's it. And some were honest enough to admit it. And you'll hear, there's all kinds of hoity-toity, hoity-toity responses. And the guy who's a PhD, who, you know, I meet much more intelligent sanitation workers.
yeah.
Let's come back to a consequence of foreclosing actual litigation over the vaccines. One of them is, you know, you part of why you trust your car, maybe you don't know it, but you know that these car manufacturers are doing their bit to make the car safer. Because if your Subaru kills you, you can sue Subaru. Done.
Yeah.
But when you can't sue the pharmaceutical industry, vaccine industry, What this does is it, and there's no discovery. You sued the Department of HHS in a special court of claims with no jury and no discovery. That means that we're never really purging the record out of these corporations for attorneys and activists and citizens and journalists to review what these companies know in advance. And it all comes down to what they know in advance compared to the claims they make to the public. We now can know nothing about the inside knowledge of the vaccine industry because there's no discovery process in these lawsuits.
Yeah.
And I know what I know about dioxin and PCBs and Roundup and 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T because these companies were all sued and the record came out. Their documents were purged out of their files and their foreknowledge was documented. So,
well, what's the way out of this? I mean, that's why we did an anthology on vaccine years ago, and I called it the issue of our times because I saw then that, and now that this issue, the inherent in this vaccination issue, is the issue of freedom and liberty. I mean, it's a huge issue of freedom in our country. And so how do we get out of this? Because you're absolutely right. And you go to the vaccine court. So not only are most people, or probably most people, not recognizing a vaccine injury or reporting it, those that then, by the time try to sue the government, very few of them are going to actually get through the arduous process. Then the government is going to have all kinds of attorneys that they're paying. Mm. How does the individual citizen in this case have any liberty? I mean,
well, and now a lot of people, a lot of nurses, doctors, teachers, are all being fired this week.
Jefferson County in Oregon declared a state of emergency and said to the governor, you've got to get rid of this mandate because we're losing all of our people. We don't have enough with the mandate. We don't have enough people. So they're quitting because they can get jobs in different places, in different states. I mean, there's plenty of jobs for healthcare people
in the states that don't have this insane mandate.
Well, you know what, I think this has a lot to do with the different way that the states are treating it, because I live in Colorado and I just moved here a year ago, so in the middle of COVID, and I was in New Mexico for a long time. But in the county that I'm in Colorado, even since I've been here, it's been really civil. There's no mask mandate. There were different times when there were mask mandates, but that was just to go into some place and then you could take it off, and we're still having restaurants dining in. My son has a jiu-jitsu school. He's been able to keep that open. So different states, I think, are handling things differently. Like, I don't feel, we just don't have a lot of vaccine mandates in the state right now.
Mm-hmm. I believe Colorado is the only state that cannot mandate them.
Oh, they cannot? Why?
There may be one other. I've not chased this fact down, but this is what I was told through my work on this issue, that Colorado is currently a place where they actually cannot mandate these injections. Look, the way out of this,
because of the it's because of the law that was passed related to the childhood vaccines that you can claim philosophical exemptions. Yeah, maybe that's what you're saying, but that's. I think it's still mandate. I don't think it's that, because that's the childhood vaccines, and you could still do an emergency mandate. But anyway, I think it's been pretty civil here the way it's been handled, and just FYI on that.
I think the way out of this is this law has to be repealed. This law indemnifying the manufacturers has to be repealed because they are, first of all, held harmless on something that they are attempting. Biden said yesterday they want to go for 98 or 99% of the population, but somehow they're held harmless. And in my long years of covering litigation, my observation was win, lose, or draw in the litigation, the ultimate benefit is the discovery motion.
It's cool that you know all this.
Right,
yeah, I don't
you're following
know
my logic here, right?
Well, yeah.
For fraud and you get past the first step in the way, you have a right to discovery. If you sue a manufacturer for fraud, you're saying, no, they did this, you have a right to the documents in the company's files that indicate whether or not they knew this was going to happen. When you see the files on PCBs, it's astonishing. I got into the PCB issue because transformers exploded on a campus, which was at the time like a 3-minute walk from my apartment.
Wow.
And when I got into that issue, my work came to the attention of some plaintiff attorneys who were suing the Nevada Power Corporation. Nevada Power Corporation was suing GE, Westinghouse, and Monsanto for fraud and failure to warn. And the documents in that case indicate that they knew these things were going to blow up. It's right there in black and white. And at the same time, you can read all the press releases saying, oh no, this is perfectly safe. We've got Congress to mandate them as safety equipment to get insurance. And at the same time, they knew they were exploding. They knew that they were contaminating everything in their path and everyone in their path, and the poisons were being found in the North Pole, where there's no PCB transformers.
Yeah.
So it's always that parallel story, and we have no way to pry this open because there's
don't we have Freedom of Information Act, and we have congressional records. I was at a congressional hearing in, I believe, 2000 on thimerosal, and I heard the head of the CDC at that time give evidence about the thimerosal and the vaccine that it was, you know, statistically significantly causing speech and language delays. Mm-hmm. And I took the document home. They printed out this whole document of all the testimony. It was interesting that his verbal testimony was different than what he put in the record. Mm-hmm. But even in the written record, you could see those statistics. But then down the road, that study was redone. And of course they said, oh no, it doesn't do that. But I mean, I think there is evidence outside of discovery.
A little bit.
And even the product safety information that the manufacturers list usually has, if you have a brain and you can read it, the implications of it, it's all in there. So many of the things are in there, like this
inflammation of the heart.
Yeah, heart inflammation. Yeah, so now that's in there now, but.
Well, not to be disrespectful at all. My track record of covering these types of mass poisoning and fraud issues indicates that what is actually given to the government is so limited compared to what the companies know.
Okay.
In all of their concealed documents, all the things that are stamped destroy by burning or shredding. Proprietary class one, destroy by burning or shredding, those documents.
Okay.
Right? It's a whole other world.
No, any company worth its salt is going to know that stuff. They've got to know any of the things already, like you're saying. They're going to know any of the adverse effects that are going to happen. Yeah.
They know.
So maybe this is what we've been waiting for then, because in covering the vaccine injuries for kids for so many years, I could never see how the government would ever admit any kind of wrongdoing, because it would put them at huge liability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is it going to be then that this COVID vaccine, which will then create liability that will be visible to people, will be the thing that will finally bring this to the front? Because if they're trying to get to 98%, all what that means is vaccinate the kids.
And I do
not want to see that happen.
Well, they're right on that. They're doing down to 12-year-olds now.
Yeah, but they've already, Pfizer's now just about ready to ask for approval of the one for the under 12s.
Mm-hmm, down to 5.
And most people are in it, you know, do not agree with it. There's a lot of health people that don't see this a risk benefit works out. I mean, we know that, and this is what makes, you know, people tend to think that COVID is the same for everybody. But 80% of the COVID infections are, in fact, mild or asymptomatic. And 95.5% of all the deaths from COVID are people over 50. It's older people that are dying from this, that are getting sick from this, and people with comorbidities, not children.
Mm-hmm. Right. The numbers are actually worse than you're saying. The life expectancy is the median age of death with COVID. So in my mind, and I learned this from life in the 70s, 78 to 82 years old, I learned this from Monsanto. It's a statistical maneuver where you call that category, and you take everyone out of that category and you put them in that category. You just rename the category, and then you instantaneously make it safe. This is the piece I was doing in 94 when I was reading Mothering and studying a serious incident where Monsanto exposed many of its employees to dioxin in a chemical reactor explosion in Nitro, West Virginia.
Nitro was a great name.
So these are all old maneuvers, and the problem is people don't have the benefits of a document collection. They don't know where to even begin to look at this.
No. Or they don't know, and then they have to not only begin to look at it, they have to believe that it exists.
Yeah, to even ask the question.
Well,
look, thank you for starting that. And I wish, you know, there was a little more natural consciousness. You know, one crazy thing, and I had bookmarked this topic, and maybe we can end with this. It is my observation that the natural health community is one of the most co-opted communities in the United States in terms of going gung-ho on this mRNA injection, as if they don't believe that that eating well and taking care of themselves will keep them healthier.
So, but if you're following the censorship of the natural health websites like Mercola and National Children's Defense, right?
Yep.
Those are, they're coming out strong about it, but they're getting so censored on social media. And then I just read today that YouTube was going to take down all the vaccine misinformation, and I didn't get a chance to read it yet, but I bet they're going after those Mercola, right? And
the misinformation.
And RFK. Yeah, Robert F. Kennedy. So they're definitely co-opted. I don't know. I think it's in the, I don't know about the whole natural health community being co-opted. It's really an interesting liberal conservative thing here right now, though. I find myself being more in tune with some of the more conservative outlets that I'm reading than the liberal outlets. Mm-hmm. It seems like the liberal outlets, which is maybe what you're saying about the natural health community, are like, oh, let's go, let's all do this. And yeah, there's so little.
When I go into the local health food store.
Is there, because we're not, this whole censorship stuff, we don't, it's really even hard to track, to talk to people. How do you even find out what people, you know, how many, we can't even talk as a group. See, that's what Mothering did. Mothering, back in the day, there was no internet. You couldn't find another natural mom. You didn't know if there was another natural mom even in your community. So you found this community of people, and they supported you, and you could ask questions with each other and you know, support each other to do things that were against the norm. But where is that now? Where can we even come to, you know, they by the censorship on the web, by censoring all these sites, it's very difficult for us to come together. Like I talked recently to a mom who's breastfeeding and didn't want to take the vaccine because she's breastfeeding and didn't want to take it while she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, I have no one to talk to. Mm-hmm. You know, my family thinks I'm crazy, and I don't know any other moms in this position. So who's she talking to? Mm-hmm. So how do we find this community?
Well, I get a lot of emails about this, and you just have to grouse around. You just have to come out of your shell and start talking to people. But I assure you, you're very unlikely to find them at the local health food center where everyone's going to be prancing around wearing a mask and their vaccinated necklace that the governor wants us to wear. And you're much more likely to find them at the like local firehouse or the Republican club because it has been politicized.
Yeah.
And everyone who was questioning became a Trump supporter by definition, right? By categorical definition. And everyone who wasn't questioning just became a Biden supporter and a lover of, you know, the lover of all things good, apple pie and Chevrolet. And the rest of us were a bunch of lunatics, even for asking questions.
Yeah, for asking questions, exactly. So what can we leave people with, though? Because, you know, we've got the bad guys over here and the bad guys over here, and it's overwhelming. How can parents and other and individuals be empowered about this issue? What can we recommend to them? Be informed.
You have to take the time to read.
Sources.
It's not about being informed so much as being obsessive.
Yeah.
You need to put in hundreds of hours of work and to withhold judgment and you got to consider yourself a juror. That's my standard, is that I conduct myself as if I was a juror, and I have to make an objective decision based on the preponderance of the evidence. That takes time.
Well, that takes time, and everyone is going to do that. So no. I would say what I'm doing is also getting information from lots of different sources. Like, I'm looking at sources in other countries. I've started reading what Al Jazeera has to say. Reuters and AP are very, like, there's a media's ad fontes media bias chart in which these two are more in the middle, you know, so try to find some more middle sources, read some left and right sources, read some international sources, get more information. I get a lot of information from Children's Health Defense, mm-hmm. Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s site. I think he's doing a lot of good work.
Well, The Off Guardian is fantastic.
So what is say? The Guardian?
Off Guardian, not The Guardian.
Oh, The Off Guardian.
The Off Guardian is one of the best things I've ever seen, maybe the best thing since Mothering, to come out of the alternative press.
Okay.
Swiss Policy Research compiles all of the data. I do not trust any. I could fact check a Reuters article with my eyes closed. None of them are trustworthy. They're all putting out these horseshit fact checks that were like, for example, last year, the lab release theory would get you kicked off Facebook. This year, the lab release theory gets you increased on Facebook.
Oh, my God. Now we're going to accept it in a couple of years.
Oh, no. It's accepted. It's going to be the fall guy.
Peggy,
I hate to tell you this.
Tell me. I want to know.
At the bottom of this story, my guest on Friday's Planet Waves, if we're recording this on the 29th of September, my guest on the 1st is Christine Massey, who has conducted and or organized around the world the compilation of all of the state, national, and provincial governments, as well as freedom information law requests to agencies that are subject to open records laws.
Wow.
And 107 unanimously, all of them, none of them can point to paperwork or a study that actually proves the existence of the virus. And 107 don't include 5 from the CDC. This happens to be my field of greatest knowledge, is the test. The test has not been validated. Nobody's got a sample of SARS-CoV-2.
We're talking about the PCR test.
Yeah, the polymerase chain reaction, and in particular, the assay design for SARS-CoV-2. The PCR is like an abacus or a computer. You can program it to do anything. And they're running all these tests up at cycle threshold 40-45, where they're almost assured to get the necessary number of positives, having nothing to do with infectious material or infection or illness. Nothing.
This sounds really creepily like the whole HIV scandal.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing, because the PCR test, as you know, was invented by Carrie Mullis, mm-hmm. who said it was never intended to be used for infectious disease mm-hmm. and to detect infectious disease. And years ago, I was solicited by people who were questioning the whole HIV/AIDS hypothesis, because pregnant women were going to start being tested with the PCR, and they said it had a lot of false positives. Mm. And sure enough, pregnant women got tested. They were found positive. It was recommended or prescribed to them that they start taking these very toxic drugs. Mm. And they, again, as part of this natural community, had questions about that. Mm-hmm. But one of the biggest questions in that whole debate was that they said the same thing, that the HIV could not be detected in a microscope. And who was in charge of this whole operation but Fauci?
And Gallo, Fauci is the son of Gallo.
Yeah.
Gallo is like Morgoth and Sauron in The Lord of the Rings. You know, Morgoth, who readers of The Lord of the Rings don't know. But if you read The Silmarillion, you know that Sauron, the evil guy, you know, with the rings, he had a granddaddy. That's Gallo.
That's Gallo. Yeah, Gallo for sure. Yeah.
He was the monster behind Fauci. Who made this out of whole cloth, out of a press conference one day with no science to back it. And that would be, she was probably in power during the Vaccine Act. Her name was Heckler. She was the HHS secretary at the time.
What about her?
she and Gallo called the press conference where they just announced one day they found the cause of AIDS. Yeah. Probable cause of AIDS. And 2 days later, they dropped the probable, but nobody published a study. There was nothing.
No. Nothing. Yeah, because I've been, you know, we followed that issue. We got, mothering got attacked. Our whole Wikipedia page got attacked just from covering that issue about parents asking questions about that.
Yeah. And pregnancy and is on the list of 100 possible false positives for HIV.
Yes, there you go.
100 sources of false positives, and simple, innocent pregnancy is one of them.
All right, so going back to this Christine and these various other sources, I want to also mention, I did mention Children's Health Defense, mm-hmm. and U.S. Right to Know is another good one.
Great.
What else? You are much more in touch with some of these sources than I am, so I think that would be good.
You know, my readers, I publish a blog that that consolidates all of this called COVID-19 News. We like to publish work by Thomas Cowan. He's been reliable. Andrew Kaufman has been reliable. But for a broad spectrum, I think Off Guardian is one of the very best sources. I will make available what I think is one of the best pieces I've seen in a long time on this. You know, we consolidate all this at COVID-19 News, which is published by the same nonprofit that this radio program is. So we pull together a lot of stuff on there, and we go back to March 3rd, 2020. So many
sources. I'm so glad you're doing that. And what can we say to people about the issue of standing up? I mean,
it's a therapy issue.
Yeah, go to therapy.
It's a therapy issue. It's about your parents. It's about, do you have the guts? It's a relationship issue. Do you have the guts to stand up to someone, or do you give your power away?
Yeah, it's an authority issue.
It's an authority issue. Yes. And you have to, at some point, decide you don't care if people like you. You don't care if people hate you. You don't care what your husband thinks. You don't care what your wife thinks or your boyfriend thinks. You've got your viewpoint.
So it's about personal autonomy,
I think,
and informed consent. And informed consent is a doctrine in jurisprudence for over 100 years. And the whole core of informed consent is the right to decline, that you get to have information to make a decision. You're supposed to be given alternatives to that information or to that prescription, and that you get to decide whether or not you're even have enough information. You don't get to decide just if you're smart enough or you read enough. You just get to decide. So let's, you know, bringing it back to that simple issue for people.
Yeah,
like, it is up to them. They don't have to do this. You know, the thing about the kids that's so insidious is that they, you know, you can't go to school unless you get vaccinated. So if you've got a state that has philosophical exemptions, you're good. But, you know, that's another thing you can do, is get involved in state efforts to keep philosophical exemptions, the vaccines present.
Yeah. I don't think there's an information issue so much as that there's a personal bias issue, and people can't see past their own personal biases. They think that the polio vaccine is the Holy Communion and the milk of the Virgin Mary. And they don't know what the Qatar incident is, and they've never heard of SV40.
No.
I assure you that the mother's milk of the Virgin Mary is not simian virus 40.
No, I'm sure it's
not. They're two different things. They go in two different directions.
I think it does have a lot to do with, again, standing up to your family. That's what I would hear from parents over and over again. I once had a woman come into my office, and she was crying because her family back home in wherever she was from, the Midwest, thought she should vaccinate, and her alternative practitioner thought she shouldn't. And she had no idea what she felt, because she felt pressured from both sides. So I think it really is hard for a lot of people to make a decision in all this noise going on. And it's maybe standing up against their doctor, but it's also their family. Yeah. We saw that. I saw that mother over and over, whether it was circumcision, vaccination, home birth, anything, homeschooling.
Yeah. Yes.
But the issue was not the issue. The issue was, can you stand up for yourself?
Yeah.
And how do you do it? Because a lot of people think, oh, they got to do it by having a big fight all the time or whatever. You know, I don't recommend that to people. I mean, you try 2-3 times maybe to talk to people about stuff, but you're not on the same page. Let it go. Make your own decision. You don't have to explain it to people or justify it to others. I even say you can, I mean, I'm even in favor of social lying. You know, I don't think to protect yourself that that's impossible. We would take our kids into the emergency room for various things. Over the years, I had four kids. And in the beginning, I tried to argue. They'd say, oh, do you have, are you up to date on the vaccinations? And I try to argue the whole case. And then after time, I realized I just want my child taken care of. If I start arguing this case, it's going to distract. I'm not going to get what I want. So I would just say something like, it's all good. It's all taken care of. You know, so just, you can also, yeah.
Well, one last thought. You know. I believe the precautionary principle is very strong ground to stand on.
Okay.
The precautionary principle is simply that in the, it has two parts. One, what's the worst case scenario? Second, in the absence of data, what do you assume?
What's the worst case scenario? And in the absence of data, what do you assume?
Right. So we have a diversity of worst case scenarios with this COVID shot. We know what they are, if anyone believes the VAERS database exists. And the other one is, what do you do? You have a right to get the information that you want, but what do you assume when you're missing information? Do you say, well, Tony Fauci would never lie. Andrew Cuomo, he's a wonderful person. I'll believe what they say. Or do you say, well, maybe it's worth waiting. Maybe let me find out a little bit more. That's precaution, right? It's like, well, you know. I'll give this a year.
Yeah, but if you get to that question, but if you are a believer in the false narrative, what's the worst case scenario? You know, somebody can get hurt. In the absence of data, what do I assume that, you know, I'm not going to get hurt? So how do you get out of that?
You have to want to. You know, there's a Native American proverb, you can't awaken somebody who's pretending to be asleep.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And I think a lot of these people are pretending to be asleep, and it's just all viewpoint. I mean, I just had someone cancel their subscription because I was lying in my article yesterday. So I said, you tell me one thing I got wrong? Well, tell me if I'm lying.
Tell me,
fact check it. Let's go. Lay it on me. What did I get wrong?
Totally.
And no, of course not. Of course that's not. No, that's not where we're going. We're going, I'm a liar and she knows the truth and that's it.
So is this going to wake us up? I mean, is this the 50s and we're heading for the 60s again?
Mm.
Because, right? Because, yeah. No, I can, you know.
I hope so.
I'm in my 70s now. So I'm like looking at like what, you know, I have a broad perspective now. And so where is this going? Is this leading to a more, you know, a more repressive society? Or are people are circumstances going to come out where we're going to find out the source of this? We're finding out NIH has been funding this all along. People are injured. You know, is that going to wake people up? Because when you look at the numbers, what they try to say is try to make this political, and it's not. And the people that are not being vaccinated are the younger people, really. A lot of the younger people are questioning this in the terms of age groups. So
that's good.
I'm just curious.
I wish I knew
more of them.
I have friends I love dearly who've gone out and gotten this thing, and they know me, and they know me well enough to know that I've got information that would help them, and they're like, nope, I'm getting it.
And they don't ask you, yeah.
Or they even know. They know. Somebody
very close
to me.
And they don't want to deal with it, yeah. So
parents
pressure
them.
Rush?
Parents pressure them. So it's like, well, I stood up to my parents. I don't need Fauci. Fauci can't step in and be my daddy.
Yeah.
And my mom taught me a healthy skepticism for medical procedures.
Okay, good.
Despite all, whatever, you know, nobody's parents are perfect, but my mom gave me a couple of real gifts.
Good.
And one of them was, you question doctors. Most people, they go into paralysis. And I questioned anyone. I'm a fucking journalist.
Question
I better
authority.
Be able to question anything
authority.
And everyone question
Absolutely.
Authority.
If you want to be a citizen or a human being who, you know, you've got to question authority. You're the only one that's going to live with the consequences of your actions. That doctor is not going to, I would say
right.
that to parents, I would say 20 years from now, that doctor's not going to remember your name.
Mm.
You know, they're not going to remember they even saw you, but you're going to be living with the results of what decision you made based on that visit. So you decide for yourself, and you protect yourself and your family, and that's what your job is. not to listen to some authority, because 20 years from now, if something happens bad, say you did something, you vaccinated your child, there was a reaction. 20 years from now, you're going to say, well, at least I did my best. I looked into it. I knew, did everything I could, and this turned out. But if you didn't do anything and you didn't look into it, you're going to feel so terrible. Mm-hmm. You're going to have so many more regrets by being ignorant than you would by being informed and proactive.
Yeah, it breaks my heart. And these people who are just pushing all these young people to get shot up, and it's like, are you going to apologize if she can't have a child? The reproductive effects of this COVID shot are so horrifying. I was told today by my administrative assistant, she read last night that there's 30,000 reports in England of menstrual irregularities. In England, where it's not listed as a side effect, I have a massive crush on an old friend who's now a birth doula. And I one day she just appeared out of nowhere. Anna, I just fucking love this girl. And she's like, well, she was this Miss Natural when I knew her as a younger woman. And she's like, well, I got the shot when I was pregnant and I had a miscarriage. And no, maybe it's a coincidence. I'm like, Anna,
it's not a coincidence.
You're a
no.
fucking doula. Pay attention. Look at the look at it. Look at the numbers. Look at what people are saying. I'm going to have a guest on soon. She spoke at Foley Square talking about softball size menstrual blood clots being emitted from some women's bodies.
Oh, my God.
This is so the deepest, darkest elements of this are Bill Gates' depopulation plan. We will not know that for a few years. 10. The reports are horrifying, and it must be terrible to have some sense of this and then have like your mother and father saying you got to leave the house if you don't get this injection.
Or this woman I'm talking to, it's like she's come to a point now because she's been on maternity leave and now it's time to go back to work and they're requiring the vaccine. So that's the other thing for people, you know, their livelihood, all those social things that they have to negotiate. But I think we should reiterate, since we're talking about this, that there is no long-term testing of this vaccine, clearly. The safety and efficacy, what they say that they do safety and efficacy testing in just a few months? So they're only doing efficacy. There's no safety testing. I mean, they're looking for obvious things, people dropping dead, but that's not happening. But there are no long-term safety studies for this vaccine or for a lot of vaccines. Yeah, so how can they, you cannot say it's safe. So just even to getting to that point with people to say, you are taking an experimental drug, just know that are you agreeing to that? You know, you're agreeing to take this experimental drug, you know, approved for emergency use. It's, oh my God.
If there were informed
consent.
Like
you, I'm reading everything and just, I'm glad to have these new sources because I just want, like, again, with mothering, I just wanted to get information out. That was, again, before the internet. I want to get information out for parents that wasn't coming out in any press for 5 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. Literally, we would see things come out 5 years after we had covered something because we were parents researching it ourselves and finding out what was up. But, you know, people, where is that? Again, I'm still looking for that. If we can get a community of people that can talk about this, we can have more power than we have now. And I don't know where that exists. I was thinking of starting a discussion forum, or, you know, I'm looking at Signal and Telegram and those encrypted message things. But I don't know. I just think that would help.
For me, the most empowering thing after a year of digging into this was discovering a group up in Columbia County that had organized in 2019 when Cuomo signed the religious exemption out of existence in New York in mid 2019. Deal. One vote on the committee changed, and then that went to the full legislature, got out of committee and went to the legislature. And so in Columbia County, where they had depended on the religious exemption, they were organized about 8 months ahead of the COVID wave. And so when that happened, they were already in motion. And I didn't pick up on them until around maybe November of 2020, when I was tapped to be the recording engineer for Dr. Thomas Cowan and Dr. Andrew Kaufman giving a presentation during the lockdown, when it was illegal to have a meeting. And I showed up and nobody was wearing a mask, and there's 120 people in this guy's fairly large house, and everybody's crowding and hugging and kissing, and nothing's going on. And we sat there the entire day, and we listened to two doctors talk about virology and purification and isolation and exosomes, and nobody got sick. And I've been back now 10 times, and there's no COVID in this community. None.
Wow.
And so this shocked me. And there's a number of things in the late 2020 that came out. No asymptomatic spread, a study out of China. No data on masks in the New York State Health Department. No safety, no efficacy, nothing.
Yeah, now the mask, very controversial,
nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. They don't have a piece of paper. Robert F. Kennedy went berserk over this. His comments on Instagram were hilarious. You telling me this is devastating the public trust? You claim this was scientific. You don't have a single sheet of paper? Nothing. And then the Corman-Drosten review paper came out where the entire basis of the pandemic was undermined by 22 scientists in Europe who said this test is the absolutely improper use of the polymerase chain reaction. Your entire test design and all your premises and your cycle threshold and your reverse transcriptase, it's all fucked. There's nothing. There's nothing. And that's the WHO test. So that I kind of cascaded out of this like between November and the end of the year, but it took time. And I was fully committed, and I believed I could cure this if I ever had it or had to help anyone. My house is still full of elderberry and aconite.
Yeah, elderberry syrup.
And I've got more. I could feed an army. I've got so much elderberry syrup, including a quart of handmade tincture.
I made some. Totally.
Yeah.
I made my own.
So I wasn't worried. No, everybody else is worried. I'm like, I don't know. I take Agaricon. I've got zinc. And then I finally stopped wasting it. I thought, I'm wasting my supplies.
Totally.
So I stopped using them. But my mother taught me to be empowered about medical issues. Learn how to do this. Keep books in the house. Don't believe the doctor or ask five doctors. Ah.
Exactly.
Wake the fuck up and take care of yourself. It's your life, people. It's your life.
It's your life.
It's your life. Yeah, if you get this injection and you've got blood clots or your child has a heart attack at 15... That's your problem, not the doctor's problem. It's not Pfizer's, it's not Fauci's, it's not Bush's, it's not Biden's, it's not any of these schmucks. If your kid is killed or sickened or you are killed or sickened, that's your pain.
And we're hearing stories. Yeah, and there's lots of stories in the media, especially at Children's Health Defense from RFK about people. The one doctor that had gotten injured, and she's written to everybody and who's helping these people on top of if that happens, who's helping you if you get injured? Yeah. You know, it's not like you're going to get any help for that. How are you going to even afford that?
Yeah.
So I want to ask you about that group in New York. Did you find them to be a more conservative or right group? Because I have connected with a group here in Colorado and they tend to be more on the right, which again, I'm just finding that I have a lot more in common with people on the right now.
I'm noticing that, and as someone who's like pretty much down the issues, I'm a by the book liberal, but I've always gotten along
with
too. Conservatives.
Yeah, me too.
But
yeah,
so I have found this group to be very mixed and diverse. But I would think we'd all be against the death penalty. I can't imagine anyone if you pack the house. And you let me give the introduction and say, by the way, raise your hand if you support the death penalty. I don't think you'd see one hand come up.
Okay.
So it's that if that's not there's not a lot of conservatives, but there's a whole new political contingent of basically of ex-liberals.
There you go. That's what we need to articulate. This is not a right-left issue. There's a lot of merging of these points of view. And we need to, I think we need to align ourselves with people of different, you know, politics, because that's where I'm finding a lot of the people that are thinking about liberty and personal autonomy, medical freedom.
But a lot of people who are liberal-ish can't stand the fact that someone might have voted for Trump. Well, it's like, why don't you just get to know them a little bit? Why don't you find out what they like to eat?
Exactly, because I finally understand it. Because if you read the press, it is the elite press. It is talking. You read, you know, I read the New York Times because it's the paper of record, but it just tells the stories of the rich, and it just supports the rich. It's like it's about apartments you can get in New York. Well, you know that better than I live in New York, but anyway,
how to have like fancy food during the 12 delicate exotic dishes you can make during lockdown. It's like bougie.
Totally very bougie.
You know, this is not the and they are lying about this. Look, the New York Times, here's an example, case in point. The New York Times printed in 2007 that the polymerase chain reaction was responsible for the use of this thing, was responsible for creating a pertussis outbreak at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical School that did not exist. The PCR said there were about 140 cases, but on culture, because it's a bacteria, they found none. So they knew in 2007, and me and one of my reporters tracked this down. We confirmed it against medical school. We have CDC documentation, and we have the New York Times itself. So it's triple documented, 100% false positives. Then they trot out the PCR to prove that there's a pandemic using sequences released by China and only China. And in August, the Times does a story saying, well, this thing is blowing 90% false positives. It's all fluff, basically. They printed this on the first page. And I interviewed the writer. I got her to talk before she figured out who I was. And so they've got 90% false positives. But do they adjust their case count? No. They claim they're all quote-unquote confirmed cases. Well, I'll tell you something. It ain't confirmed, it ain't a case, and it ain't a positive. Even if you believe there's a virus, in 90%...
There's no culture.
No, they can't confirm it, they can't verify it, and they don't have any... Their own instructions say this can't diagnose, as Carrie Mullis said, but they said they admit that it's running at cycle threshold 45, all of your data is irrelevant. It's meaningless. They admitted this in the paper. And then they never then said, oh, well, then, okay. Maybe 2,000 people didn't die yesterday of COVID. Maybe it was only 200. No. They're always going with the highest numbers, even though they admit that if you think there's a virus and the test has any truth at all, they're admitting 90% of them are false. That's the New York Times.
Well, it brings us back to freedom of press then, doesn't it? That the whole corporate media and what we've seen, the consolidation of the media over the last 10, 20 years.
Going on right when you were a publisher. Yes.
Yeah. And, and there used to be an alternative press. Mm-hmm. And there were quite a few, at least a dozen magazines distributed at co-ops and health food stores. Yep. And
yours was one of them.
And we were one of them. But there were, New Age Journal, East West Journal, Whole Earth. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Many, many places were all bought up. Yep. So, and all the weeklies were bought up by groups, by big publishing groups. All those independent weeklies were all bought up by Village Voice Media and a few other companies. I know this because I write horoscopes, so I had to follow this. Why I couldn't get a column.
I love that you write horoscopes too. We could talk about that forever too. I don't write horoscopes, but I used to do charts back in the day.
Oh, really?
And I follow astrology a lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Back when you had to do them by head, you had to do them by math.
I did. It would take me 10 hours to do a chart. Yeah. I loved it. I went through all the math. And
you had to interpolate.
Look in the
houses.
Books. I had this ephemeris. And yeah, it was fun.
Well, you know a lot about astrology that I don't know, because I never learned how to cast a chart without a computer.
Now you can do them. You do them, though. I mean, you just do them electronically.
Well, the chart itself, but I work in an interview process with my clients where I work more like a therapist, but I know my astrology, and so I bring them out. I get them talking to me about different times in their life, and then we figure out what the crux of the issue is now, and then we talk about that in the context of the current transits and progressions.
Cool. Can you write the horoscopes?
I've written them for many, many places around the world, Daily Mail, Daily Mirror, New York Daily News, places in Australia, Canada, many small papers. But while I was doing this, I learned how consolidated and unfree these weeklies, these supposedly independent weeklies, were becoming.
So is the goal that we have like nonprofit, because Gary Ruskin, who does U.S. Right to Know, is an old friend of mine, and he talked about nonprofit media. Is that what we need?
Because that's what I am.
Right? Exactly.
Chiron Return is a nonprofit.
It's got to be subscription, got to be, you know, reader supported.
Yes, reader supported, yes, yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, you're just going to get, and you may not, you know, like the point of view, but you can get different points of view, but they're so constrained at these, most of these mainstream media outlets by the, you know, the blowback from the advertisers.
The most horrible example I can give you is that in New York area and San Francisco Bay Area during AIDS, when the question was immediate and urgent, the papers were all supported by these nitrite type of drugs like Rush and Locker Room. Essentially, it's snorting floor polish.
What?
And yeah, this is one of the most important causes of all the early immune breakdowns that were later attributed to HIV.
Exactly.
But the papers, all the gay papers were supported by ads for that very product. So the question could never come up where they would have lost their advertising and gone out of business.
Because that's what Fauci did, too. He brought it out of the gay community and just made it like everyone can get it and everyone's at risk and don't even touch anybody. It's the same old, same old.
Amyl butyl nitrate, the drug is called.
Okay.
And it's big business. And the chemical question with the immune breakdown called AIDS was never asked. There was no tox team. And to the extent that the free press, all these papers in The Village and San Francisco could have asked it, no, totally compromised.
Is this drug you're talking about, is this an IV drug?
No, it's a snort. You snort it. You sniff it. It's like sniffing glue. Okay. Basically, I contacted the district attorney in my area who said that I could order some. It's legal. So I'm curious what it smells like. I was going out to clubs in that era, but never did it. It would never occur to me to snort floor polish or anything, any solvent in my entire life. I didn't. I would drink like one vodka tonic the whole night, maybe. One beer, you know, like that's the kind of kid I was. I'm not going to snort floor polish or what, you know, that's fucking nuts. But this, when you read Peter Duisberg's work and Celia Farber's work, and you read the work of the people who actually did the story, amyl butyl nitrate.
Yeah.
And
it's so parallel to that whole HIV thing, the way people were, you know, demonized and killed, Christine Maggiore. And these are all friends of mine, Celia and
Well, I was fortunate enough to have lunch on Sunday with Celia Farber and her sister, and Mark Crispin Miller, the dissident professor from NYU.
All-star dissident lunch. I've always followed him over the years. I was really glad to see that you had interviewed him. Well, if you see her again, give her my love. I'm not in touch with her right now.
I absolutely will. I just met her. I didn't know you were friends. I met another one of her friends on Monday. Who's now, gracing the front page of all the Planet Waves websites, Julie Morey, a disability activist with cerebral palsy, who was pleading with the crowd. She said what my grandmother would say and what any grandmother, what's wrong with you? Rolling your sleeve up and taking an injection that you don't know what's in it? She was screaming, what's wrong with you? There you go. Followed closely by a woman, I'm drawing a blank on her name, who's going to be on the program soon talking about menstrual irregularities.
Oh, yeah, I want to hear about that.
And I said, you know, give me my theory why we can't talk about menstrual irregularities. That's because we're not allowed to talk about menstruation. The women are all embarrassed to talk about it.
Oh, please.
All we know about menstruation is you wear white pants and ride a bike.
It's not happening anymore. Women talk about their vaginas all the time.
Oh, good.
They don't care about that anymore.
When I heard the word menstruation from the stage, my eyes popped open because I had not heard that word for a long time. I hear vaginas a lot.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, you're right. We can use that word, but not the real thing.
Yeah, not the real thing, right? Not like, you know, all four weeks of the month. Yeah. This whole lunar cycle, a lot of things happen. And in this very delicate, totally. Incredible female ecosystem. Let's learn about it.
Totally.
Peggy, absolutely a pleasure.
Wow. Oh, so, such a pleasure, Eric. I have to talk forever.
Yes. Well, our conversation will be half the program. It's going to save me a lot of work on October 7th. It's like done. I'm ready to go.
Cool. All right. Good.
All right. I'll send you some contact. I will send you a hello email to Celia in case you want to get back in touch. And I've so long wanted to connect with you, and I'm so happy that we have.
I'm so glad that we did. Thank you so much. Yeah, I know Celia and those guys from the whole HIV thing mm-hmm. that was brought to my attention. And then Celia wrote our articles about Christine Maggiore, and we all became friends. So
yeah, good. Well, she's been very helpful on this story for me. She just keeps handing me the keys and cards out of her Rolodex and says, "Why don't you call that person up?" And I call up and say, "Celia Farber sent me," and I'm treated like royalty. So she's been very, very good to me.
Epoch Times, is that what I found her?
She's writing now, and she'll eventually write for Planet Waves, and she's living up here, kind of on the other side of the mountain, about 20 minutes away.
And are you up by Woodstock?
Yes, I'm in Kingston.
Kingston, yeah, you're in Kingston. That's where, you know, Michael Weisbrot?
No, who is he?
He was one of our main photographers for years, and he lived in Kingston. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll look for him. Michael Weisbrot.
Yeah. Weisbrot, I think it's Weisbrot.
Yeah, I've never heard of him. I never saw his photo credit anywhere, but who knows.
What have I seen in her obituary? What? No, anyway.
All right, Miss Peggy.
All right, good. We'll be more in touch, and thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Keep up the good fight.
Thank you.
Okay, take care of this.
Bye.